Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It is the 25th of April, and very nice to have you with us for this program today. We have a wonderful panel, as we always do, and we welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Just a reminder to keep your letters short and to the point. We love diatribes. Well, no, we don't. So just, you know, a couple sentences would be fine. And don't add links or abbreviations and things that we can't read quickly, because we're doing it on the fly. We're reading quickly, and we want to be able to adequately communicate your message to our listening audience. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce that panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Yo, Joe.
Hello. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Well, you know.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Rosemary Arameo is here. She is the director of the journalism department at the University at Albany. Hello.
Hello. I'm in much better shape than Alan.
Okay. And you're going just by his answer?
Yes, going by his answer.
And we have Mike Spain with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here as well. All right, let's get started with what is making news today. And that would be, let's talk about tax rates. The very sexy topic of tax rates. Donald Trump seeks a 15% corporate tax rate, even if it swells the national debt. That was his big announcement on tax reform. President Trump is pursuing a drastic cut in corporate tax rate, a move that is likely to grow the national debt and breach a long-held Republican goal of curbing federal borrowing. The president has instructed advisors to propose cutting the corporate tax from 35% to 15%, according to White House officials who said they were not authorized to speak publicly about the plan. The rate reduction, which independent budget experts say could cost the federal government $2.4 trillion over a decade, is larger than what House Republicans had proposed in their own plan. White House officials said the president would make the announcement Wednesday as part of a release of broad principles to overhaul the tax code. All of this just a few days before he reaches his magical 100 days in office.
Which means nothing, well, by the way.
Yes. Alan.
A couple of things here. Number one, you know, we don't know whether that's the real figure he wants. You know, this is the art of the deal man. And he may be saying, you know, 35% when he wants 20%. But the big issue here is how much money he will indebt the United States to. I mean, think about this for a second. This is a guy who, along with the Republicans, says we're in deep debt. We have too much debt. And he's going to add trillions of dollars to that debt by doing this. Not only that, but the corporations are already making out like, should I say, bandits, in that there are so many deductions, so many of their K Street lobbyists are coming over and getting them not to pay taxes, that we hear from certain major corporations in the United States and in our listening area pay nothing at all. So the idea that trickle-down economics, which is what he says is at stake here, trickle-down economics. Remember that, folks? Ronald Reagan, it didn't work then, it hasn't worked before, and it's not going to work now, and he knows it.
Now,
this is disgusting.
Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said Monday, Alan, that the tax plan will pay for itself with economic growth.
Of course, that's what trickle down. That's how they always try to. That's how they always try to sell
it'll be
trickle
okay.
down.
It's so many people are going to bask in the glow that it's going to take care of itself.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
To quote the Princess Bride, liar.
I like that better,
Rosemary.
Well, I mean, what these guys say, the difficulty now is that Trump has a legislature that is believes in him, too, even though, as they say, it didn't work under Reagan. I'm not sure what's different now that they think it will, but I think he's going to get it. And the proof then will come out, just as it did in Kansas. You remember the Kansas governor got this through there, and the state went into a steep and an immediate decline, unable to pay for education and other services that people have come to expect. I think the same thing will happen in the United States. And in the meantime, companies will make out better. That companies are just in their glory in America right now. Those of us in higher income brackets will do just fine. And the people who suffer are those who voted for him. They'll continue to support him. It's going to be horrifying for me to watch. I have friends in journalism saying, stop whining, just start reporting. But it is very difficult to watch when you just don't suspect that. There's no evidence that this will work at all. Companies will get richer. They seem to have unlimited greed, but now there's no regulations. There'll be very little in money. Also, one other thing to bring up, and I'll be interested in what you say about this, the effective rate of corporate income tax in this country is nowhere near 35%. No one actually pays that amount. So I'm not sure what the actual impact of making that the real rate will be.
Yeah, it's important to point that out and note that there's so many loopholes and so many little tricks that corporations use, just like individuals use, to lower how much tax they actually pay. But remember, President Obama had also wanted to lower the corporate tax rate, but with it, remove a lot of these loopholes and make it simpler. And it was seen as a way to get corporations that keep some of their money offshore to bring it back to the U.S. and invest it. So there is some broad consensus. You know, Paul Ryan wants to do it. The conservative Republicans in the House and Senate want to do it. Whether it can be 15%, I mean, we'll have to see what he says. If they take all the loopholes away, it may have a better chance of going. Although I agree with you, Alan, it's probably going to be higher than 15%. But if they do actually close the loopholes, it could actually provide more income into the system. I'll be a skeptic until they close the loopholes and whether they would close the loopholes. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think it's important that we all remember this campaign finance business, and you get what you pay for. Now, K Street has this huge legion of lobbyists. They come over and they get Mike and Roseberry these deals that you've just been talking about. So this one gets deductions for this and that, and that is how they earn a living. And they also make sure that the congressmen and senators that they are supporting get supported for doing their duty. And as I've said many times, if you give a congressman $50,000 one way or the other, or a senator $50,000, and you get $5 billion back for it, worth the money, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, that's a good return on investment, no question.
White House officials have said there are several basic principles to their tax plan. They want to simplify the tax code, cut the corporate tax rate, pass a middle-class tax cut, and create a way to punish companies that move overseas and ship goods back into the country. They also want to encourage U.S. companies to move money back into the United States. All of those being campaign promises that were touted throughout this land as the then candidate Trump went from sea to shining sea. However, he also said that he wanted to cut the deficit.
Yeah, he said a whole lot of things, and I don't know why we're sitting here talking about what he said, because he says anything he wants today. He's saying the leader of North Korea isn't as strong as the leader himself thinks he is. And he doesn't even go to his briefing, so what does he know? And I think that's the same with economics. He also promised major infrastructure repair
right. And
a wall that could cost up to $20 billion. You don't do that while slashing the budget this way. And it's the overall vision that we need to keep in mind. His idea is to cut taxes to make people happy, and then also to completely slash services to help people who are not in among his voters, and to build up a military. It just is. It's the whole vision that we liberals ought to be moaning and groaning about. I guess we are.
Well, I'd be worried if this goes through, if I was a public accountant, because they're talking about shrinking the number of brackets, you know, bringing it down to something mm-hmm. like three. And that would enable people to, you know, the government has all the information on your income and on your interest income and on your job income, et cetera. So they could just send you a form that you sign or go online and sign, and that would take care of your taxes. That's the way they do it in a lot of other countries. And a lot, you know, next election, there'd be a program, you know, like they had to put miners back to work. They'd want to put accountants back to work, I think. You know,
I mean, I don't think anybody is against reform and simplification of the tax code. It's been something talked about for at least the last two administrations that I'm aware of, mm-hmm. that I was paying attention to. But like health care reform, it requires a systemic, bipartisan approach that we don't use anymore in our Congress. So we're wary and nervous about this.
I think it's very important for us to look at Trumpism versus Republicanism in the United States Congress. These are not the same guys. And I think one of the problems that the Republicans are going to have is with the deficit, if you think about it. They're not going to put up with that. They can't, because they're going to be held responsible for it. So your moderate, Bushian Republican types are going to be at odds with Trump on this. Trump wants to keep it simple because he is simple.
Well, one important thing is it's coming out a couple of days before the 100 days, which I jokingly said earlier doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
Trump likes to assert it doesn't mean anything and then is racing to get as many proposals on the table as possible. So he gets the benefit of coming out with this radical tax reduction plan. It's not going to go anywhere before Saturday. It's probably not going to go anywhere at all. But he gets the sort of political, benefit, the interest of having set it before the 100 days. And I'm sure when the list comes out Saturday on the White House website, this will be among it.
I keep thinking.
Go ahead, Alan.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm.
No, I keep thinking. Yeah. No, you go.
No, you go first. You go first. No, all I was going to say is that the question is, I was struck by what Rosemary said a few moments ago about, you know, vision and you know, what do we know? And did you all read the AP mm-hmm. interview? Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, I'm sorry. I do not know how anyone could read that. No matter what your political persuasion,
and feel good about America,
and feel comfortable that not only that there perhaps is an ideology that doesn't align with yours, but that there is a grasp of anything there, and I don't know, and maybe it's just that it can't be articulated in words. It is, if anyone has not seen it yet, and the Washington Post has done a good job of annotating it, but it is unlike anything I've ever seen or read in my life. It is hard to believe that to your point of why are we even talking about, you know, what he said in the campaign trail, because none of it matters. Well, that article really has the only thing that seems to matter is that he had more electoral college votes than Hillary Clinton, and that, as Mike said, that we've done a lot in 100 days.
Yeah, I'm kind of sputtering. I cannot believe. I look at the people around him who are not narcissists or not any of the things we accuse Donald Trump of being, and they stand by him and defend and act as if they're loyal and apparently are loyal to him. I don't know how that happens. I get Ivanka and Jared. They're kind of related and their inheritance depends on it. But you know, that small thing. But there are many professional people who know about politics and government and economy and whatever it is he's spouting off about and knows nothing about, and they stand up for it. What are they thinking in their heads? You can't.
And
go ahead. I'm done.
I'm confused. I'm confused that only I think the number was 29% of the people think that Donald Trump should be impeached. Did you see that this morning?
I didn't.
29%, I think it is.
What poll is this?
In a recent poll.
Yes, but still, the polls of the people who voted for him are consistently high. I mean, it just means there's a greater divide of the people who liked him and didn't like him in November. Now the ones who didn't like him dislike him even more, and the ones who voted for him are sticking to him.
I don't know what poll. The one I'm
so
seeing.
One last thing. He stands up and he says, right, to the American people in his inauguration, I want to be president of all the people, right? All the people. Now he's justifying everything he's doing, and he's saying it out loud, really incredibly grotesque, that it is his base. I have to do all these things to satisfy my base as opposed to all those people I was going to represent.
I'm not even convinced he knows what base means. He just thinks it's people who are with him, and he always sees that as inflated beyond numbers in any poll, even the Rasmussen poll. He thinks everyone loves him.
Well, and he also said in that article in the interview with AP that he'll do it for his base, but he'll do it things that he doesn't feel that he just thinks are right. And the poll that I see that's New Allen says 4 in 10 people believe he should be impeached.
Wow.
Yep. Well, that's 40.
Actually,
not
29%. 40% of registered voters.
I saw something in the 20s, but who knows?
Okay. All right.
What can I tell you?
Okay, my theory is that he also got it wrong about the percentage to slash the corporate tax. If you look at the stories, Congress was saying 20%. They want to slash it from 35 to 20.
Right.
I think he got the 20% mixed up, so he subtracted 20% from the 35 now, and that's how he came up with 15. I don't think it's the art of the deal at all.
According to Newsweek, 51% of women support impeaching Donald Trump. 38% of men overall, 44%.
Where were they on election day, those women?
Repent, you women who voted for him.
Oh. Let's take a break. We will come back and talk more issues. We welcome your comments panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain are in the house. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain and the group this morning. We welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A couple letters. We start with Margie, who says, yeah, lifts all boats except the ones that leak. And thanks to 45's failure to heed science, we're going to learn more than we ever wanted to know about rising tides, won't we?
Oh, excellent.
Good letter.
Well, and also there's the story coming out this morning about Mexico and the wall, and talking about the illegality of the wall because of the concerns over flooding. Did you read that story?
Which is interesting. I did not see this.
Yeah, so that's coming out this morning as well. Apparently there's some... what would it be? A
environmental
treaty or something that would limit that because of the concerns over the Rio Grande. But anyway, the devil is in the details, but the devil doesn't give us any details. We're left to debate, speculate, and wonder about the future of our economy and public services with nothing but a fleeting statement from our president. I expect very little from tomorrow's plan.
I expect very little from him, yes.
Okay.
You're getting a lot. I want you to know you're getting a lot for your dollar.
Let's move on to other subjects. We'll go to...
And so is he.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot for your dollar too, from your dollar too, including jet planes and Mar-a-Lago and building the value of all his stuff. It's unbelievable.
If you want to know...
Thinking, I'm sorry.
Yes.
If you want to know more about Mar-a-Lago, go to that State Department website.
I think
not anymore.
Yeah, they took it down.
Yeah.
Nice commercial there.
What was
it? Was historical.
I missed that one. What was it?
It was an educational piece. It was an educational piece that our State Department posted on some of its foreign country sites. You know, they have like a UK, US State Department site, et cetera. And it was just a nice history of Mar-a-Lago, explaining what
it
is.
It was a commercial. You're thinking of coming to the United States? Send your diplomats here, where they'll live in style and can play golf.
And have access to the President of the United States every other weekend.
Some people thought that as a way for the State Department to promote a private business. Oh, and it happens to belong to the president.
If they took it down, obviously they understood that. What you've just said.
Correct.
That some people, meaning a lot of people, saw it that way.
Sometimes, Alan, you have to
cater
to those negative people.
So next story is over the spending bill. Fights over short-term spending bills have long been used by Republicans and Democrats as proxies for broader policy fights. But with Republicans fully in control of Washington, President Trump has turned a sure thing into a major drama with a Friday night deadline before much of the government shuts down. Congressional appropriators, always happy to spend money together, seemed on a glide path to do so until Mr. Trump intervened, insisting on using the bill to get a down payment on a wall at the Mexican border that even many Republicans are leery of and that he has long insisted would be paid for by Mexico. He appeared to soften his demand late Monday, saying he would settle for additional funds for border security, potentially including at least part of the wall. So just like the gates or
30 what? Feet. I don't know.
According to a senior administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity.
He came out today and said he'll wait. He came out today, flip-flopped, and said he would consider it would be fine with as long as the funding comes in next year's budget. And he warned the people not to listen to the lying press that would say what I just did, which is the truth. He flip-flopped.
So, well, he has a remarkable ability to say something and not be held accountable to it later when he says something contradictory.
Right, which I blame him for, I should be blaming my fellow Americans.
Well,
Professor
Armeo has warned me not to quote myself because that's plagiarism.
Self-plagiarism.
So I'm going back to my earlier remarks of the morning at 7:45. When I say, you know, all this stuff about, is the government going to close down? Well, Rosemary, I think you talked to them also, but I talked to a South Korean deputation a couple of weeks ago. Remember that? And I said to them, are you nervous about the nukes next door in North Korea? And they all laughed and said, no.
Wow.
Well, so, and I feel the same way about the federal budget deadline, which is after a while, it's the chicken little, the sky is falling in, nobody believes it anymore. And you say, they'll get through it. Maybe it'll be a day or two, but believe me, they'll do what they have to do. And we're not worried about the nukes next door if you're following me at all in my misguided comments.
No, we get it. Actually, you know, this government, I wouldn't mind if it did shut down. Of course, I'm not a federal worker whose salary depends on it.
Yes. Yeah. And family are waiting for food, you know.
But never mind, because he's going to slash all those jobs anyway. You're probably going to be, you might as well get used to it now.
The story I was referring to earlier is the White House pushes Congress to fund President Trump's U.S.-Mexico border wall. A new wrinkle has emerged that could stymie parts of the massive project. Mexican engineers believe the construction of the border barrier may violate a 47-year-old treaty governing the shared waters of the Rio Grande. If Mexico protests, the fate of the wall could be end up in international court, according to the chief Mexican engineer on the International Boundary and Water Commission. That some border wall proposals he has seen would violate the treaty, and Mexico would not stand for that.
How are they going to take care of that, Joe?
Well,
they won't stand for it. Bring out the Mexican army.
Do we honor the?
We won't stand. We won't stand for this.
Well, maybe they'll withhold their payment.
Well, no. Do we honor the rulings of international courts usually?
If they favor us, we do.
Oh.
And if we have agreed to participate in them, which often we do not, because we're afraid we may get caught on the sharp edge of the stick.
I believe that any step that he takes to build this wall will be contested at legal level from the state up to international. It will not be done quickly, just as his moves to ban Muslims and to rape the environment are being blocked legally.
But don't you see, he gets to have his cake and eat it too here.
Right.
He gets
exactly.
to say it.
Exactly.
He gets to talk about the wall and complain about those who are stymieing him in court, just like about the travel ban. He did it. And then, as Jeff Sessions said, some judge on some island out in the Pacific invalidated the president of the United States, you know. He gets to have his cake and eat it, too. He's honoring his campaign. Yep. And it doesn't happen. He doesn't have to worry about the liability of a $3 billion wall either, and the impact will devastate the economy. He doesn't have to worry.
And Mike, I think that's why the base, the quote base, sticks with him. you know, you don't have to do it. All you have to do is say you wanted to do it, and they say, yeah, he was our guy. He tried to do that.
And the liberals stopped him, and we still are against them. And it's like that Atlantic magazine story a few weeks ago. You know, the liberals take Trump literally, but they don't take him seriously. And his base takes him seriously, but they don't take him literally.
They don't listen to his every promise and word. And like I said, why are we even bothering with that? He doesn't pay attention
because
to
I
it.
Think it's important to share the words of the president. Allow me to, regarding the wall. Well, first of all, the wall will cost much less than the numbers I'm seeing. I'm seeing numbers. I mean, this wall is not going to be that expensive. AP says, what do you think the estimate on it would be? He responds, oh, I'm seeing numbers, $24 billion. I think I'll do it for $10 billion or less. That's not a lot of money relative to what we're talking about. If we stop 1% of the drugs from coming in, and we'll stop all of it, but if we stop 1% of the drugs because we have the wall, they're coming around in certain areas. But if you have a wall, they can't do it because it's a real wall. There's a tremendously good investment, 1%. The drugs pouring through on the southern border are unbelievable. He goes on and basically starts talking about the prices, but then says that if it goes higher, it doesn't matter. I think $10 billion or less. And if I do a super duper higher, better security, everything else, maybe it goes a little bit more, but it's not going to be anywhere near those kind of numbers. And they're using those numbers, they're using those high numbers to make it sound unpalatable. And the fact is it's going to cost much less money, just like the airplane.
Rink in Central Park, which he did do. You know, they were arguing about how much it was going to cost. He said, I could do it for cheaply. He did it. So now the Wallman Rink equals the multi-billion-dollar wall, on the border.
Okay, let's go back to the idea of he's going to stop all the drugs. So this will, the wall would...
Well, he's going to stop all drugs,
all
but
drugs,
even if you did
drugs.
1%, it would still be a victory.
I'll go with his word, all of it.
Lowering
so he's going to make it more difficult to transport drugs, which means the cost of drugs are going to go up. Wow, that'll stop it, because it's price that decides whether you're going to be addicted or not. It's just...
Well, but it's not going to happen.
Who's your money on, Alan? Pablo Escobar or Donald Trump?
And by the way, what's his name? What's the name of the guy they just caught who's in the federal prison in New York? El Chapo, who killed all those people and all the rest of it. He's complaining about the lack of good food in the jail, in the prison in the United States.
I don't know. There's a lot of good Mexican restaurants in Manhattan.
It's not funny. All we can do is laugh, though.
All right. We're going to take a break. It'll be a super-duper higher, better break. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Field Goods, local produce from the Hudson Valley delivered weekly to workplace and community locations, helping people change the way they eat while supporting sustainability. Fieldgoods.com for information. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us as we talk about the news of the day. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right. Let's talk about North Korea for a moment. The Senate staff is perplexed by an unusual White House private briefing on North Korea. Does anyone understand this? The White House announced Monday that it would host an unusual private briefing on North Korea for the entire Senate, prompting questions from lawmakers about whether the Trump administration intends to use the event as a photo op ahead of its 100-day mark. Press Secretary Sean Spicer told reporters that the lawmakers would be briefed Wednesday by several administration officials, including the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. He emphasized that the meeting plan had been convened by Senate leadership and that the White House was serving as the location.
Well, it's pretty interesting, as it came out on television last night. There's no place in the White House that allows a high security information meeting like that fits in 100 people plus whatever the administration sends in. So they have to, they're outfitting the building next door to the White House to make it secure enough to do this.
Why don't they just fly everybody to Mar-a-Lago?
Why didn't they just go
to
the Senate?
That's where we launch missile attacks and other...
Yeah, I mean, aren't they equipped to do that at the Senate?
And they also cut short Pence's little trip home. He's not going to get his stopover in Hawaii to go see the Arizona and all that. He has to come right home to Pennsylvania Avenue. So is it a photo op? Is it the announcement of some precipitous and probably hazardous to the whole world experience in North Korea? What's he doing? He keeps us guessing, doesn't
Rosemary,
he?
I'm,
it's like, you know, it's like
Rosemary,
reality I'm TV, Alan.
You know, Rosemary, I'm exactly where you are. The first thing that I thought of when I saw that he was convening these high congressional types was that he wants to do something that is going to put us all at tremendous risk.
Yeah.
And one of the things is the first 100-day theory. But then there is this other theory, which is he's going to tell them why he has to do something really, really tough to the North Koreans, which might bring something back. And that scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Alan. I don't like the sounds of it at all.
Yeah, and it's very close to the 100 days. Maybe he could, you know, take decisive action.
Yeah, that'll cap off.
Right, exactly.
It's not funny, but that'll cap off the 100 days with a bang.
Jeez. Oh, dear. I can't even joke about
that.
You want to protest on Earth Day? I'll show you Earth Day and climate change, and he'll, you know, take action to distract us all. It's all possible. That's why it's so horrible to think about. Gloom and doom liberals.
With him, it is.
Yeah, with him.
And with him, it is possible.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, what kind of press, you know, they're saying it would be a photo op. What kind of photo op would that be? I mean, I don't understand what the advantage is even. In that of just that you have the Senate come to
showing
you.
The president with the lawmakers all around you talking about great danger to the country and he's protecting you from it. That's a pretty good photo op.
Well, I mean, the Pentagon, don't you all remember with great detail back in 1962 in October when, they'll have reconnaissance photos and they'll have them labeled with, you know, white stripes with black type on them saying what's in that, you know, in that bunker or what's in that, giant arena or something. And you know, it'll have some drama to it. They know how to do a photo op, Joe. You got to understand.
No, they know how to do a show, put on a show, right?
Yeah, well, let's see.
They are. People are here talking about it.
Carol writes to us and says, the reason the billionaires are working for Trump is simple, taxes. The law allows for an exemption on capital gains taxes for assets put into trust. For this wealthy group, this is tens of millions of dollars, so they hold their noses and do his bidding. Joseph writes, Rosemary mentioned that no one is against the simplification of the tax code. She's usually right about everything, but not in this case. Intuit, the folks behind TurboTax and H&R Block spent over $5 million last year lobbying against a bill co-sponsored by then-Congressman and now Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price that would have permanently barred the government from offering taxpayers pre-filled returns.
That's right. That's a good point to bring up. The tax companies are the biggest lobbyists. They want taxes to be simpler, but not simple.
No, they have to be difficult enough so that you cry and go to them and say, please help me.
Right, and pay for the software.
Elias.
I don't know where. Yeah, go ahead.
Elias says, for progressives, impeaching Trump would be a mistake. Pence would continue all of Trump's regressive policies. and also be a much stronger opponent in the 2020 election.
Hmm. Oh, there's no good options. We can't disagree. There are just no good options. You can have an ideologue or a person with no ideology, no morals, no truthfulness in his body. Boy, there's a good choice. Or get rid of both of them, and then we get Paul Ryan, the bloodless soul sucker.
No, no, you don't. You get the 25th Amendment.
He's a soulless bloodsucker, I think.
it used to be you got Paul Ryan. And if everybody got wiped out on one day, I'm sure that's a very bad thing to say, but then you'd get Paul Ryan. But otherwise, the president nominates the new vice president, or the vice president who becomes the president and nominates the vice president.
That's true, but there are some scenarios that Pence would be caught up in the same malfeasance that Trump did, and you would lose both
exactly
of them.
The
other thing that could happen out of this, seriously, is that, you know, if this continues and he keeps proposing things that even alienate conservatives, moderates, it's already done it to the liberals. That there'll be a coalition of people who just sort of disregard him and they start to talk to each other and start running the country. I don't think it's going to happen, but it could.
Well, to some degree, it may already be happening. I mean, if you that's a very interesting thought, Mike. If you take a look at what happened when the generals who are now in office, Mad Dog and all the other guys, got started to talk about Russia, here was Trump caught with his tail in a ringer over Russia, and all of a sudden saying, you know, they're our friends, I like Putin, and all of a sudden the generals, the guys who are running the defense industry and the rest of it, are talking about our old enemies, the Russians. So maybe to some degree what you just suggested is already happening.
Let's go to Catherine's letter, who says, can someone clarify the statement that 96% of those who voted for Trump still support him? If this has not changed, how to account for the slip in his popularity or the rise in people in favor of impeachment, not to mention all the articles you see about Trump voter buyer's remorse?
Because he's lost among independents and Democrats who held their nose and voted for him because they didn't want Hillary Clinton. But the Trump supporters have been there with him from the beginning and remain strong.
Even just Republicans, people registered Republicans
People
are in the 80s.
Right,
you know?
Kevin writes, my take on Republican tax plans is they are totally insincere and phony. They are against deficits when they can block Democratic initiatives and for big tax cuts for the wealthy because they will grow the economy. Stacy writes to us and says, let us not forget Trump bankrupted his businesses how many times? He's going to bankrupt the country and then they have to sell off pieces to the highest bidder. President Trump should be impeached. The man is phony, says Stacy.
Somebody with some cash could really make a killing in the real estate market if the economy was sour.
Oh, yeah. I wonder who that
buy
might
that
be.
Wall, buy the wallet, cut rate.
And the last letter I have before me right now is James, who says they don't believe the trickle-down economics is actually going to work. The election of Donald Trump acted as a general education litmus test for the oligarchs. If we're uneducated enough to elect Donald Trump to the presidency, then we're definitely not in a position to understand the trickle-down economics is a money-making scam.
Good letter.
No,
getting
he's
some
right.
Very good letters
today.
This
is today. The best stuff of the show.
No, that's a great letter because it is the uneducated. I mean, Donald Trump told us that with his own mouth. Remember, he got up there and he said,
I love
the undereducated.
Right.
I love them. That's right. If they're undereducated, if they don't know anything, hey, you can manipulate them all over the place. They can talk about how every person of color gets a free television or a free cell phone. They can tell anything they want, and they're going to believe it because they're undereducated.
And yet we will get into trouble for saying that aloud because this country loves the salt of the earth. They love the real people, and everybody else is the intelligentsia. Deserve to be ignored.
All right. So one of the things, I guess last question for the – so I think as a group we all believe that the government will not be shut down and we'll figure out a way here, right? It seems slim
to
none.
Yeah, he's caving on the wall a little bit. I mean, that demand.
Oh, there's that false press, that false news. He didn't cave. He hasn't changed at all about the wall, Michael.
He's negotiating.
Yeah, that's it.
He's taking a different tactic.
That's it. There you go.
So – again, we're all in agreement that the government doesn't shut down at the end of the week?
Well, I have an asterisk. I have an asterisk, which is it might shut down for
you have a nice
days.
Asterisk. Go ahead.
Yeah. Wow.
Might shut down. Oh, see, now there you go. So if it might shut down for a couple of days, but they'll figure that out. I mean, if that's what they have to do. But no, I'm generally in agreement. It can shut down.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many other topics to discuss. We will get to France and many other items in the news. We also want to talk about the double execution in Arkansas and probably a little bit more about North Korea. So we will talk about all of those topics upon our return. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Please send it to that address and only that address, panel@WAMC.org. We will continue after this short break. All right. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group. And so we got this from Linda, who says, I can't quite make out what Rosemary's T-shirt says, so could she please stand up and read it?
It says First Amendment.
It's the WAMC First Amendment T-shirt. By the way, that's not creepy at all, Linda.
She's looking at my chest. Ew.
Why do you wear a T-shirt with words on it if you don't want people to
read
it?
That's right. That's right. Alan, what are you wearing today?
I'm wearing a complete black outfit.
Really?
Black pants.
Really?
You know, shirt and all that.
Forever
all that
in mourning.
Because for Johnny.
Your Johnny Cash uniform. Yeah.
Yes.
Johnny Cash, man in black.
All right, Mike, let's go to you an update of what is happening in the city of Albany and what our mayor is up to.
Well, it's interesting. The city of Albany, as long as when Jerry Jennings was mayor back in 2009, has had a policy of not to question people when police go to a neighborhood disturbance or they respond somewhere about what their immigration status is. And Kathy Sheehan, the mayor of Albany, yesterday issued an executive order that reiterates that policy. It protects their very effective and very successful and system of community policing. In other words, if someone is a victim of a crime, they want them to know that they can call police and they can come to their aid. Or if someone is seeking other assistance, or if there's a problem, that they won't come and say, "You got your papers?" They're not going to do that. Now, that does not preclude if there's a crime and you're being investigated for it, they would certainly pursue that. But they don't use the term. They very specifically avoid the term sanctuary city. That connotes that they're going to take on the U.S. government where they could stand to lose millions of dollars in federal aid. So they just don't want to go that route. But she did praise New York State's Attorney General Schneiderman, who has given guidance to communities who wanted to take this route and wanted to see what their legal options were to not cooperate with the federal government and essentially not be a agent of the federal government going after people who are undocumented. Interestingly, last week, the Schenectady City Council considered a measure that would establish Schenectady as a sanctuary city using the name Sanctuary City, and it did not pass. The council instead passed a measure that a lot of cities are doing that says they're urging Congress to adopt broad immigration reform, and they backed off it. I mean, cities are nervous about going on the record and being in opposition to the Trump administration and the consequences that may come for it. Others are much bolder and have no qualms about standing firm on their status and are proud of it. But Albany is trying to have essentially the benefits of offering sanctuary. Now, you know, some people argue that sanctuary cities will become havens for criminals and they'll all go there thinking that they'll be safe, but it's just the opposite, I believe. I mean, if people are afraid to call police when they're the victims of domestic violence because they don't have proper immigration status and they're afraid of being deported, They can be enslaved. I mean, they'll be just subject to all kinds of misfortune and abuse. So, you know, and it should be noted that Kathy Sheehan is in the middle of a reelection campaign. So it's important, you know, to say that on the record. But this is a policy that the Common Council affirmed last year. It's a policy that really has been around since 2009, but it seems all the more newsworthy today. Mm-hmm.
All right.
The president's threat then is working. Jeff Sessions' threat: do what we want, or we'll control the purse strings. So enough for states' rights and local rights. Yay! Hard to believe Republicans are in power, huh?
It is amazing how the conversations we're all having. Mm-hmm. What can I say?
It's that was well put. It's amazing the conversations.
And remember, when this all goes up to the Supreme Court, you know what's going to happen for exactly the reason we just saw. It's going to be 5-4.
It may not be, Alan, because this is like, it is the heart of constructionism, that whole document, the Constitution, is set up to preserve states' rights. So, it could happen. They voted 5-4 on the elections, and the same thing I might have said then. But they also could just as easily say, no, we got to protect states' rights.
As I've often said, details, they change with the wind, whatever's convenient.
Let's go to some letters. This one from Diana in Greenfield, who said, I worked for the government for 30 years, going through several government shutdowns. First, essential services, management and contracting aren't cut during a shutdown. And second, government workers do not lose money. We receive pay for our time off, and we returned to work. Paid vacation, thank you very much. Exactly. Shutdowns are just political posturing, and they cost the government agencies as well as the people they serve. Kathleen. Exactly.
And we also, Joe, got beaten up quite badly for looking down our noses at the uneducated. We got several letters, you know, about that. And that, of course, is not what we intended to do.
It's what it's I intended to do. One. Hold it. Don't speak for both of us.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I never would want to do that, except that I think that you're justified in saying it, because one thing we can be sure of, and that is the less people know, the more manipulatable they are. But several, Rosemary, of the letters said, what about all those college-educated white men who voted for Trump?
Okay, well, racism's ugly, too.
Yep.
So Kathleen writes and says, as you all struggle valiantly to describe, explain, and process King Donald's words and actions, I am struck by how impossible it is to understand an irrational person. The Brenda says, the uneducated argument still doesn't explain why more college-educated white men voted for Trump than Clinton. I've yet to read one article interviewing those men, but I've seen plenty blaming Appalachia for Trump. Please, I'll take misogyny for 500, Alex.
I blame them all. I blame them all. No problem.
Joanne says, I worked with communicatively impaired children for 35 years, and all the time I never heard such a clear example of language thinking impairment as is apparent in 45's language. Wow. Travis in Vermont says, I disagree with probably 95% of Mike Pence's politics, but I'd be so relieved to see him take over for Trump. Mm-hmm. At least he can form a sentence.
He's sane.
Nick says, Nick says it's the undereducated that take out your trash, that keeps your water running, that fixes the power lines in sub-zero weather. Trump won because educated folks like Hillary look down their noses and continue to do so now.
Well, wow, I guess you got us. Whoa. No, what an irrational response to being looked down upon. You put the crazy person in who's going to hurt us all. That's what happens when you're uneducated.
Well, the conservatives, not just Trump, have been very successful at causing this divide and building this divide, that there's a liberal elite that look down their nose on the rest of society and they think they're smarter than everybody else. And they've gained great mileage politically on that notion by promulgating that belief. And there is some basis for it. People do look down their nose at other people when they don't think they're educated, and that that hurts. And so I think they're playing on that. And
I think there's far more prejudice against the intelligentsia, against the so-called liberal elite, or it now has been conflated with an economic elite, like it's the same and it isn't. And we sit back because we don't want to look like we're looking down on people. And we make comments like this that are very palliative and conciliatory. And I've had enough of it.
Are you looking down your nose at me?
Yes.
Okay. But when you take something, Joe, will we be going to the we'll be going to the Arkansas execution?
Yes.
Right. At some point here.
Oh my goodness. Because
and in fact, we can go there right now.
Go. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the double execution, Arkansas executed two convicted murderers on Monday night, the first time in almost 17 years that any state has executed two inmates on the same day, as the state carries out a series of capital punishments before one of its lethal injection drugs expires. So two men, Jack Jones, Marcel Williams, one at 7:20, one at 10:33, executed last night. Alan, you were going to say.
Well, I was just wondering, has anybody seen a poll on pro-death penalty in this country? Because I remember when Mario lost all those years ago, it was probably one of the two or three things that really killed him on this bad metaphor, really hurt him on the on his election, where the fourth election, which he lost. And I do think there are many people in this country who think that if you kill my kid or you kill my grandson – or you kill my mother, you deserve to die, not to be held in the in a prison for $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, and then to be let out at the end because you've changed, because the person who got killed is still dead. Now, I happen to be opposed to the death penalty. I'm trying to think it through. I know that we shouldn't be killing people and all of that. But I do understand that there is a common sense zeitgeist of people who just feel together that there are some truths that the so-called elite shove down their throats.
Yeah, okay. Alan always says I'm against the death penalty and then makes an argument that sounds like it's for the death penalty. We've had these discussions before. The judicial system cannot be built on emotion or popularity. Polls have absolutely nothing to do with it. It's all about fairly, equally, equitably distributing the rules so that no one is treated, say, to death or loss of freedom for frivolous reasons. And the expiration of a drug is the most frivolous reason that I have ever heard of to kill a person.
To hurry up
and do that.
Meanwhile, and I don't know in the case of these two men, but I know in the first execution, he had been on death row for 25 years.
Right, but Arkansas hadn't used the death penalty since, 2005? And, just to build on what Rosemary said, to rush it through like this, to ram it through, just seems, inhumane and it's
difficult. Well, especially when you have a two-for-one sale for
Right, yeah, Texas has done that. Texas has a high rate of, using the death penalty.
Just to answer Alan's question, according to a poll taken about a year ago, 61%, this is a Gallup poll, 61% of U.S. adults favor use of the death penalty, 37% oppose.
I take great exception to Rosemary's condescension to my position.
It wasn't a condescension. It was a killer argument against
you. It was condescending. And what I think here, based on what you just heard, when you say the judicial system is not a matter of popularity, it's not a matter of this or that, it actually is. Almost all laws that are passed are based on what the population in this country or these states think of it. Now, I think as an intellectual position, the death penalty is unjustified. But unlike you, Rosemary, I do understand how other people feel about this.
Well, I think even if you look at it from the point of view of what people want, there are only a handful of states in this whole country that kill people. And that speaks to the way our judicial systems are run by the way the local people want.
Well, the death penalty is legal in the United States, and the U.S. Supreme Court chose not to intervene in these two cases in Arkansas that let these go forward. It's regarded as constitutional and has been. I mean, a court could find in the future that it is not constitutional based on it being cruel and unusual punishment, but that's not the way they interpret it now.
Okay, we're right onto the line. This is a highly contested issue about whether execution by injection is humane or not, whether it is indeed constitutional. It's very much in dispute, and that's the real reason Arkansas is rushing, because it's going to get harder to execute people, as it ought to be. It ought to be really, really hard to take away someone's life.
I don't disagree, and I think that the death penalty could be regarded as cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah.
But that's another point of view.
All right. Our final topic for today is I would like to kind of wrap up what we were talking about yesterday in regards to the vote in France that happened over the weekend. I believe we have 12 days now until the next round. And there was palpable relief, reading from the New York Times, there was palpable relief in mainstream Europe on Monday at the success of the independent centrist Emmanuel Macron in the first round of the French presidential elections, and a wide assumption that he will defeat the far-right Marine Le Pen in a runoff 2 weeks from now. After other recent electoral setbacks for far-right populists and the far-right's flagging momentum in Germany's election campaign, some even suggested that the French election could represent the high-water mark of the populist surge that has voted Britain out of the European Union and Donald Trump into power in the United States. If this is a high-water mark, though, the water remains quite high.
I can tell you that before Donald Trump was elected, I said I thought he could win, and I think she can win too. I don't know if you heard the NPR reports yesterday, or maybe the BBC from Paris. They were talking to people who could not vote for her, for Le Pen, but they couldn't vote for him either, and they said it's the same old, same old. And I can't do it. I just can't make myself do it. So this is one of those situations where anything could happen.
Yeah, well, I don't think she's going to win. But I didn't think, Trump would win either. Her opponent is not a Hillary Clinton. He's actually a neophyte to politics. So he doesn't
39,
have,
is that right?
Yeah, yes, young guy. 39. He does not have experience in any government office. He doesn't have the baggage of a Hillary Clinton. So and all
well,
of the opponents, the 12 candidates who were originally in this race, have now all aligned against Marine Le Pen. And I hope that's a good sign. But I think Alan ultimately is right.
Yeah, people might sit out the race. And that's, I think, how Trump, millennials sat out at huge numbers and huge percentages, even though they wouldn't have favored Trump. It kind of went his way.
Feel free to fact check me, but am I right that in the first round it was almost 80% of voter turnout? Is that true?
In the first round of the French?
Oh, the French one? Yes. Ooh, I don't know.
I thought I heard that, but I'm not sure.
Hmm.
I'll look
it
up.
A lot of people. We don't come close to that in this country. Not close. In the most contested of elections, half the people don't vote, or about half the people don't vote.
I want to see some more numbers on that. Do people not vote because of apathy or because there are a variety of measures and more coming that keep them, that suppress their vote?
A combination. We make it difficult for people to vote.
We do.
And in New York, there's bills before the legislature that would let you vote by mail without having to make up some excuse for being out of town.
Right.
There's vote early.
Yeah, the Republicans and...
Right.
Yeah, the Republicans in the Senate are going to vote for that, all right.
No, they're not. You're right, exactly. And they're opposed to it because people don't want everybody to vote. They just want people who have more mobility and who agree with them to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So if you might lose among minorities, you want to make it more difficult for minorities in inner cities who might not have cars and might not be able to leave work and go vote on Election Day. You want to make it more difficult for them to do that. That's the reason.
As far as fact checking is concerned, Rosemary, you always say he doesn't have any government experience. He actually was the economics minister, if I'm not incorrect about that. Joe, could you fact check me on that? I think he was in one of the presidential cabinets. But I think the important thing is he didn't have electoral experience. That's what you meant, I'm sure.
Right, right. He had not run for public office.
He's a senior civil servant and a former investment banker.
Yeah.
He's 30.
No experience in government and governance.
But he's got probably has more experience, and he's older than the son-in-law, Jared Kushner, of
That's
of
true.
Our president
and
Trump.
Look at Jared.
And look he's running everything.
He's doing everything, exactly. Yeah.
So, he is currently the Minister of the Economy, Industry, and Digital Affairs.
So he's internet savvy.
That's important.
And Le Pen, meanwhile, is sitting down with Putin, and she's collecting so much money from Putin. And it's just, it's also that other parallel with our election. The Russians are involved. It's just so open, and they're kind
of
Kind
they
of
don't
proud
have any laws that prevent the president of Russia from giving money to your campaign.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody who participated and listened in, and hope you'll join us tomorrow morning. My thanks, of course, to Alan and Rosemary and Mike. Have a great day. We'll resume tomorrow, and we'll continue our program after this short break.